Hey friends, I am Becky Davidson, and you are listening to the Rising Above Ministries podcast. I am so glad that you are here today. And, you know, we want more and more special needs parents to find our podcast. And one of the best ways for that to happen is for our listeners like you to subscribe to the podcast and to also leave us a rating and review. And that way, more and more people will be able to find this resource that we have available. So we would be so grateful if you would just take a few minutes and do that for us today. Also, if you've not already done so, we would love for you to download our new and free Rising Above app that's now available. And let me tell you, the app is full of resources and encouragement and videos for special needs families. And we would love for you to help us spread the word about this new resource that we have available as well. This week is the monthly episode that I do with two of my friends and fellow special needs moms, where we talk about different topics related to the special needs life. So Dawn Fry and Lori Chapman are back with me today, and we're going to be talking about what we as parents need to know should our children with special needs require surgery or a hospital stay in light of all of the new restrictions with COVID. You know, the last place that I wanted to take my son during this pandemic was the hospital. And yet, we have had multiple doctor's visits, multiple tests, and he has had 4 surgical procedures in just the last month, plus an overnight stay. And so, knowing your rights as a parent of a child with a disability is critical as you advocate for your child. And we are going to have a conversation where we walk through some of the steps that you can take in advance to help alleviate any issues should you find yourself in a situation where your child needs to go to the hospital, and hopefully help you to be more prepared. Hey, Dawn and Lori, thank you both so much for joining me for the podcast today. This is probably what, our third, fourth one?
Maybe something fourth. Like that.
I don't remember.
Oh, that's probably right.
How many we've done. But for those who are joining in today that maybe are new to the podcast, let's just briefly, I want to introduce yourselves. I'd love for you to introduce yourselves, just tell a little bit about your family. And, you know, we have been friends, goodness, are pretty much your whole journey. I'm my son's older than your kiddos, but ever since you all became special needs moms, we've pretty much been friends this whole journey. And so I'm just grateful for that. But Dawn, tell a little bit about your crew, just for those people maybe who are new to the podcast.
Sure. Okay. So, I have a husband, Sean, and we have boy, girl twins who are 18. And our son has autism, so that's how I got hooked up with Rising Above and participated in things that they were doing.
And you serve on our board of directors?
I do serve on the board of directors.
And you're also, you and your husband are both local attorneys
in
our town. And so Lori and I are very grateful for that, because if we have any legal questions, we come to you first thing. So. Yeah. So Lori, tell us about your crew.
All right. My name is Lori, obviously. I have a husband named Steve. We have 5 children.
She had to stop and count there for a minute.
We have 5 children and 2 grandchildren. And two of our daughters have Down syndrome. And that's why we get to be a part of this awesome community, because of them, Josie and Emily. They are 18 and 17.
And so we've been on this journey as special needs parents for quite a while. You know, my son is now 23. John Alex, you know, requires 24/7 care, nonverbal, all, you know, pretty involved with his care. So we have walked this journey together for many, many years. And so I think it's fun having friends that get it and understand. So I loved when we get to have these conversations each month where, you know, usually we're sharing stories of other special needs parents, but in this episode and when you guys are part of the podcast, we kind of like to talk about just different issues and different things that may come up in our walk as special needs parents. And so that what we're going to talk about today is something I never dreamed we would really even have to have a conversation about. But in light of COVID, my goodness, we, our family has experienced something that I needed some help with, and it was a scary, scary time, but we got it, you know, with thanks to Don Fry, we got some things in place. But I think it's important. I'm going to go back and tell a little bit of the backstory as to why we're having this conversation. But, you know, when COVID hit, we were trying so hard to keep John Alex out of crowds, out of, you know, we didn't go to church. We watched church online. We didn't go into stores or go places, and tried so hard to just to kind of keep him isolated away from big crowds and away from people. And then all of a sudden, about 6 weeks ago, we started having some issues with his kidneys, and we had to start that round of going to specialist, going to have tests. We ended up being the one place I did not want to be, which was a hospital, because of what was going on with him. So through all the tests and everything that we did, we found out that he was going to have surgery. And again, the one place I didn't want to go was a hospital in all of the craziness that was going on. So I get the phone call from the hospital for all the pre-op testing. Now, I had been told, because I asked, I said, you know, my son is nonverbal. My son requires 24/7 care. He needs eyes on him at all times. And I explained, you know, it's going to be very important. I'm his voice. You know, I need to be able to be with him. And I was told that shouldn't be, for the first person, that shouldn't be a problem. We'll make sure that they know that you need to be able to come in with him. So I thought, okay, we'll hopefully be okay. So they call for the pre-op testing. And in that, I bring that up and I say, you know, I've been told I can come in with them. And they said, well, you can come in with him, but when he goes into surgery, you're going to have to leave the building. And we're not going to let you, can't be in here. And then when he's all out and ready to come, we'll basically let you know. And I was like, I went from being somewhat peaceful to tanking in a matter of seconds, because in my mind, I'm going, you know, I have this child with profound special needs. I'm his voice. How in the world, you can't, I have to be there when he comes out of surgery. You can't just, you know, I need to be able to be there to be his voice and to tell you what's going on with him. And the lady was like, well, I'm sorry. I just don't know. You know, right now they're not letting anybody in. So I hang up the phone with her. And I immediately pick up the phone and call Don Fry. Don Fry, friend, but also Don Fry, attorney at law. Because I was like, Don, they're telling me I can't go in with him, or I'm not going to be able to go with him to recovery, that I have to leave when he's in surgery. And because I was like, I know that there has to be some rights that parents have. And so, Don, I'm going to let you take it from here and kind of what you what you did and what you told me.
Sure. So the first piece that's important, and this may or may not apply to your child, is do they have a conservatorship, right? So that's one piece that we looked at. And I think we've covered that in other podcasts. But persons with disabilities have rights in a couple of places. And the first one is under the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act. And under the Americans with Disabilities Act, persons with disabilities who require assistance to be able to do the basic things that you know, people can do for themselves, then they can get assistance with that thing. So if you need help with, you know, if you were visually impaired or hearing impaired or anything of, you know, that nature, or in John Alex's case, it was mobility issues, verbal, unable to communicate, that sort of thing. So under the ADA, you have the ability and the right to be able to provide those things, or the person with a disability has the right to have someone that can provide that service to them, right? So if the facility could provide that service, then denying you from coming in might be all well and good.
Meaning, but like if it was someone maybe who needed an interpreter because they were hearing impaired, it didn't necessarily have to be a parent.
That's right. That's right. As long as the facility can provide you with that interpreter, yes, right. Because deaf is covered under the ADA. But in John Alex's case, what you provide to him, which is the communication and then the constant supervision, is not something that facility would have been able to do because they don't speak John Alex's language.
Exactly.
Because it's all body language, right? So right. An interpreter would have not done any good. So and I wrote a letter for you, which I'll talk about now, or I'll talk about
later. Well, basically, I called you and I was like, Dawn, what do I do? Because they're telling me that there's a chance I'm not going to get to be there with him. And right. So you took it from there.
So I actually had made a couple of phone calls to know exactly where to find that information, because I knew what it was, but I didn't know exactly where to find it. And for all of those that are listening to this podcast who are Tennessee people, okay, the ADA is federal law, so that applies to everybody in the United States, but then specifically to Tennessee, and I was just looking it up here on my computer as well, Disability Rights Tennessee actually, along with other organizations, filed a lawsuit against the state of Tennessee. And the whole purpose of the lawsuit was that we were unfortunately finding that when it came to deciding who's going to get a ventilator and who wasn't, mm-hmm. our medical facilities were not always giving value to our persons with disabilities. They perhaps were thinking, oh, this person has such a severe disability, they're quality of life is probably not that good anyway, so we'll give the ventilator to someone else.
Right.
So that was the basis of the lawsuit. But in that as well, Tennessee and the governor of Tennessee issued some Tennessee guidelines that go along with that. But in these guidelines as well, it addresses, and it's a very small piece, but it's there, that for visitation in a hospital, and it's on page 8. Let me just run on down there and I can tell you what it says. But it says that hospital facilities should be looking on a case-by-case basis as to who should come into the facility or not. Because obviously with COVID, we know that it's best practice that you don't expose people to too many other people.
Right.
Right. And Tennessee acknowledged that. But on a case-by-case basis, you need to look at what this patient needs, and if their needs can only be met through someone that is familiar with them, then that's what should happen. And that's what you had.
Yeah.
Right. So not allowing you in was actually detrimental, mm-hmm. and discriminatory to John Alex.
Yeah.
Because so, no one else can interpret his language.
Right. I mean, I know my son better than anyone. Right. And just like everybody, every parent knows their children better than anyone. So thankfully, what I loved was you were like, we're going to get this taken care of before you even get down there. You did not want me walking in for surgery day, already being nervous, already being, going into a new place. Nobody knows us. And so you were like, we're going to get this taken care of before.
Right.
We even go.
Just like the person that you talked to at that moment.
Right. I
mean, that person they're just employed to ask you questions.
Exactly.
They didn't have the authority to determine anything. And everything that they were telling you was just what they had been told to tell.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So we needed to get down to somebody that had authority before you got there, because otherwise it was going to be a fight and an argument at that moment. And we didn't need it to be at that moment. We need to have that settled.
You wrote a letter, and you also, on top of that, you faxed this letter to the surgery center along with what, how many pages?
I sent the entire attachment of that, and it's on the Tennessee Disability Rights website. And you can link to this, and it's the Tennessee guidelines. And I sent the whole thing, but I referenced page 8 just so that they could find specifically what I was talking about. But sometimes if you send a lot of stuff, it looks really big.
Well, what was so funny was the next day we're actually driving. It's about a 2-hour drive to this medical facility, and we're driving for a test that we had to have done before the surgery. And my phone rings, and it's someone from the surgery center, and they were like, we got a letter from your attorney, in lots of pages, and they were very kind, and she said, you know, I don't know who you talk to, but you can come in. You don't need to worry about it. It's going to be fine, and you can come in. And so, thankfully, it was already all worked out before I got there. Now, I will say, when we arrived, it was very obvious that people had been, let's see, how do we say this, knew in advance about this mom who was coming in who had an attorney on her side. People treated me. I could tell people were a little concerned, honestly, you know, because I had nothing wrong with it. Yeah. Well, and there wasn't anything wrong with it. But what went on to happen was I always make sure I am super kind to anybody who's helping my son. And so I made sure to say thank you to everyone. I made sure to be, you know, I was not, I was not ugly in any way. I was very respectful, and they saw at that point, okay, this mom was just trying to get things in place for her son. Sure. And I did. It made me feel so much better going in and already having that already taken care of. I didn't have to worry about it going in for surgery. Now, the crazy thing is we have already had, at this point, as of Monday, have had 3 surgeries, an overnight stay, and everybody in the surgical center knows us very well now and are very kind. And it's been a very, you hate for your child to have to go through procedures, but all things considered, they have been above and beyond kind and compassionate to our family.
If your child is under 18, they should be allowing, and it might just be one parent. It might not be both, if that's your case, only one of you. But yes, they should always allow one in with a minor. But then you need to argue as well that this is the service that I provide for this person. Without this, they will not be able to get the appropriate medical care that they need. And in the letter that I sent to Becky, because I mean, it's true. If they couldn't have communicated with John Alex appropriately, they wouldn't have known if he was in pain. They wouldn't have known if something had gone wrong and he was hurting, right? If he tried to get up out of his bed and nobody was there to watch and
he could be trouble. Himself,
we're suing them.
Right.
So we had to, link it to, listen, I'm doing you a favor. Because if something goes wrong and my child can't communicate with you or falls and hurts themselves, that's on you. And you don't want that, do you? That's the way I'm saying. And they're all like, no, we don't want that.
Okay, but like,
well, and I will just tell you, we've been through so many of these now. I mean, we've been to that surgery center 3 times so far. And when you go in, I have to sign so many things, giving permission for them to even treat him. And he can't do that on his, nobody else can do that but me, you know?
Yeah. And let me say this too, just so that everything's clear. And then, so when they give you permission, you'll have to abide by whatever amount of PPE that is, right?
You're right.
Personal protective equipment. So if you have to wear a mask, if you have to double gown, if you have to wear gloves, whatever it is, you're going to have to do that.
Yeah.
So don't fight that. Don't get all my constitutional right to wear a mask or not at that moment. Right.
Right.
So you have to do whatever they ask you to do, but it's fine. Yeah.
And we're actually going to have a sample letter in the show notes so that families can see that. And it's just a guideline of something that you could have ready in advance. I think the thing for us was because we knew we were going, it was a scheduled surgery. We knew we were going and we had time to get things in place. So I think for those of us who have children who require lots of care, who we might fall in this situation, if there were an emergency, it's not a bad idea. You know, just like I carry in my purse at all times, his conservatorship letters. They're with me all the time. it's not a bad idea to go ahead and be prepared to have it. If you were to get into an emergency situation where then you have the language. That was my thing, is I wanted the language from Dawn. What do I even say?
That's good.
To be able to communicate, like they hadn't seen my son. They didn't know that, oh, trust me, it's for your benefit that I'm there helping you care for him.
Right.
You know, right. And so that was the thing. So we will be providing the listeners with a sample letter that you can then take and have it with your child's name ready to go, just to have ready. That's just great. In case you need it.
You could just put it right in your concern file. Older thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and what I saw when we actually got there, they did want us there. They wanted me there helping him. And so they went above and beyond to make accommodations for us. I know that's not the case in every hospital. I know that's not the case. I know it depends on what things look like. We've all heard of people. I had a family member who passed away from COVID who no one could come in to see him. They had to stand behind a glass. He passed away without his family with him. You know, I think it's so easy to go to those worst case scenarios when we're talking about our kiddos. And so I think just having the I wanted people to have the information before you got into that situation so you would know what to do. Example, we are in the waiting room for surgery number two, and all of a sudden there is a special needs adult, a female, who comes in. She's in a wheelchair and she's nonverbal. She has no one with her. Basically, the people that at valet wheeled her in. She had no one from her family with her, no one to speak up for her. And she's there and they're like, can you tell us your name? She couldn't tell them her name. She obviously couldn't fill out any paperwork, nothing. And they ended up calling the family member who had brought them, let them come in. And the family member, you know, was there to then answer questions for them. But I think I felt so bad because that family probably had just been told, no, you're not going to be able to come in, or no, you know, we were not letting anyone in. So they just assumed they would not be able to come in with her. And it was breaking my heart. I thought, you know, here's this poor person by themselves, completely no language, not able to communicate, not able to tell them even their name, and how scary that had to be in that moment.
Huge liability for that surgical center. They didn't know her name. She didn't know what she was there for. If you were going to have your left leg operated on and they operated on the right because you couldn't tell them any different, that is huge liability.
Yeah. And they wanted the family member in, and they let the family member stay. So what I guess my point in all this is I think we hear the news. We hear people aren't able to come in. We hear stories about family members not being able to be there because of COVID restrictions. The reality is the medical facilities need us to come in. They need us to be the voice for our children. And so not to just take what you're hearing on the news as fact, you know, to really ask those questions and have the information before you go in. Because what I saw just in that situation with that individual was they wanted and they needed the family member to be there.
So in general, because my daughter is just now 18, so this is new, but in general, would you say this is really primarily a response to COVID? I mean, is this how things have been previous, or is this really the current? Because I'm thinking, are these surgery centers and other facilities where you're saying they really wanted us there, do you think they're just still so trying to figure out what we are doing, you know, like what that surgery center is doing and how we manage this? And so you get the special needs individual in there and they're trying to, well, what is this supposed to look like for us? So really they're in a position of needing to be educated in this new season. Do you feel like that's kind of what's at play here overall?
Yes. I absolutely think so, because if it weren't COVID, you would
it wouldn't be an issue.
Exiting the building would have been
so
it's, you would have never been.
It's a new opportunity for those of us with special needs individuals to educate the public and the surgery center.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. Okay.
That's right.
And you know, it was very interesting because we've had three procedures now. I've been in pre-op. I've been in recovery three times now. And, you know, it was very interesting to be down there and I'm the only family member out of all the people there in the surgery area. You know, I'm the only one there. And people would look at me like, you know, what are you, why do you get to come back? You know, why does this patient get to have a family member? But then people, you know, they would get it and understand. So it just really wasn't a big deal. And like I said, now, you know, I know several nurses personally and they all, it's like, oh, John Alex is back, you know? So, but yeah, Lori, it's totally, I think before this would have been a non-issue.
A non-issue in that who gets to be with them, when, where, and how. But what one thing we've referred to in past podcasts and today, if you do have a child 18 or over, you need the conservatorship or you're going to run into those issues of you don't have the right to speak for them without that, which was my experience. Well, Josie was needing dental work and the dentist was having me call the insurance as well. We were trying to get him to get some approval through. She needed it done rather quickly. And so the dentist was like, as a parent, you know, you call as well. We've been talking to him. But when I called to talk, it wasn't her insurance. It was her dental insurance. They wouldn't speak to me. Even though I had conservatorship and I could tell them that over the phone, they would not let me talk on her behalf because she was over 18. So the first time I had to get to speak with them because it was time sensitive, I literally called the school and set up with an assistant to have Josie two-way call in or a three-way call in for her to give her permission over the phone for them to talk to me. They were really, you know, they were sweet about it. We were able to get it done. But there was a specific form they wanted. It didn't matter if I had already informed her insurance. The dental insurance portion of it had their own form. If they didn't necessarily want a copy of my conservatorship, they had their form that they wanted filled out. So we were able to do that. For any subsequent times that I need to talk to them over the phone, they'll now have it on file. But it was a little bit frustrating there, like, but I have a conservatorship, you know, I'm telling that over the phone. And it was very obvious when they talked to her, you know, but
they needed to talk to you.
She was able to give permission, but what if you have a nonverbal, they cannot give permission over the phone. So, I still need to, and this has reminded me to connect with her insurance directly, but for any of us, I mean, I think even if I had already given her insurance a copy of conservator, I would have unknowingly assumed that that would have been adequate for the dental. Because I've been taking it with me to appointments, but hadn't even thought about insurance. But they're like, we don't have a copy of that on file. It's at the doctor's office. So something to think about with your 18-year-olds is how many people need to know this, and they need it. They need it before I know I need it. You know, like before I have to make that call, they need to already have the permission and the documentation.
Yeah. And I've run into that so many times, just like, you know, today even I had a phone call with the surgery center for the pre-op stuff because we have to go back next week for yet another procedure. Hopefully the last, but you know, they'll ask for him every time when they call. And I have to say, you know, this is his mother. I'm his conservator. And I think it really depends on, you know, his doctor's office there at that hospital has a copy of the conservator letter. I've never had to provide it anywhere else other than to them. It's really going to just depend on, who you're talking, you know, which what facility you're working with as to where you, whether you have to do that or not. But it's one of those things, like you said, Lori, it's like, just have it taken care of ahead of time.
Well, and then just know it's questions you need to ask. Like, I carry it with me. So when we went in to the surgery center, I was like, do you need a copy of this? Here's, you know, I have this. Do you need a copy? Mm-hmm. Maybe they don't even know they need it, but I know that you need it. And then listening to you talk about him in recovery, Josie's had two procedures, and at a surgery center, they were dental procedures, and they did let me go in. It was not a problem. It was a smaller facility and not separate from a hospital. And the first procedure, they told me I could stay in the waiting room. I got to go all the way with her to being put to sleep. And once she was asleep, they asked me, you know, I had to leave. They did tell me I could stay in the building because I was a little concerned about leaving the building if I wanted to sit in the lobby. And then they would call me in for recovery. The first procedure, she was still on the recovery table. And I was able to come in and help her get set up and get in the wheelchair and acclimate. But this second time, when they called me, she was already in the wheelchair and was a little more agitated. And I don't know if that's because I was not in there. But listening to you, I realized even if it's a surgery center you're returning to or a situation, it would have been smart for me to say, because it was different personnel, different nurses, I want to be called when you take her out of that surgical room and you bring her to recovery. I want the call then. I need to be beside her. And I just assumed that they would. You know.
Well, what I learned through all of this, every time is different. You have different, like you said, you have different people. So the first time they came and got me, no, you know, no problem. In fact, one of the nurses walked down to the waiting room, was like, come on, let's go back. Took me back, got to be right with him through that. Second time, same thing. They let me, once they got him settled, they let me come be with him. What happened the second time, we were going to be inpatient because that was a bigger surgery. We were going to be spending the night. So we were hours in recovery room waiting for a room. While we were there, one of the things that I had failed to tell them, because in the first surgery, they had a nurse one-on-one with him. So I assumed that's how it was every time. Okay, when he comes out, he's going to have a nurse one-on-one with him. What I discovered the second time, that was not the case. That nurse was assigned to several patients. So when I got down to him in recovery, he was in the bed by himself, a nurse next door, but not eyes not on him. He was thankfully asleep still. But a few minutes later, I'm there with him. He sits up and about nosedives off the bed. Had I not been right there, he would have landed on the floor. So what that showed me was, okay, when we go into this next procedure, you know, the one we had this week, I told the nurse, I said, I need to speak to someone in recovery because they need to know someone has to have their eyes on him at all times. He can't, you know, I either need to be there or someone has to have their eyes on him at all times. Well, they went above and beyond and they let me actually stay on the pre-op side because it was a very short procedure. And then they took me right over to recovery and I was with him the whole time. I think it goes back to you have not because you ask not. You just need to ask, but you ask respectfully. That's what I learned. You know, when I was never rude. I let Dawn be the bulldog for me with her letter. You know what I'm saying?
Well, that's what attorneys do. And we'll tell people all the time, listen, we're the bad guy. I'm the bad guy, not you.
And so I got to go in and be kind and be, and so they saw, you know, that I'm not going to be in there and be ugly and be disrespectful and cause them problems. I want to be there to help them help my son. But you're right, Lori. I mean, it's one of those things you just kind of, as you go through, you're like, oh, now next time I know, I've got to ask that. And that's what happened with me with that second procedure was to go, okay, this can't happen, but it's on me to tell them. They don't know that my son could nosedive out of the bed. They don't know that he doesn't understand boundary, like that he could roll over and come out. If I don't tell them that, they're not going to know. And so tell them more than you think that they need to know. And then if something happens, like Dawn says, then you call Dawn Fry.
It's really really good though, because you know, these types of situations hopefully are few and far between, you know, as when your kids are old enough, even when they're younger. I mean, so I think, do we go in sometimes just assuming and not really being ready? So hopefully people will listen to this and realize, oh, you know, when this big event does happen, I'm ready. I'm advocating even more than I've maybe realized I should. And with COVID, you know, there is even more to address.
Yeah. Well, what I think would be good is, Dawn, with your help, let's let our listeners know what would be a game plan. So, you know, whether you know or don't know your child's sure. going to, you know, sometimes stuff just happens and we have to make an emergency room visit. So that's what I'm saying. To be prepared, I think the first thing that those of us who have children yeah. who are now adults with special needs, the first thing is conservatorship. I mean, like that is, if you don't have a conservatorship and you need a conservatorship for your child, that's like first and foremost. Wouldn't you say, Dawn?
Yes, I would agree with that. Yes.
So have yes. your conservatorship and have your papers with you at all times.
Oh, yes, absolutely. That is.
And then
correct.
What would you recommend from there? So you have your conservatorship in place, and then what else would you do to be prepared? So step one, conservatorship, what would you do next?
Yeah, so I would probably have the letter that we're going to provide. Of course, it won't be specific to every situation, but it's going to have the key words that you need to say, right? So there's just like in an IEP, right? I mean, there's a certain way
Absolutely.
You say it, and then suddenly everybody knows that you know your legal mm-hmm. rights. Yes. So having that, maybe even having that letter ready. I mean, it's. And it can remain generic. I mean, the letter I wrote for you was specific and I put in about a procedure and
right.
all that. You can just use that and, you know, have that. And even just having the letter, when you talk to people, you'll be able to see the wording that you need, what you need to be
the
saying.
Language that you,
the language need. That you need to be using mm-hmm. for them to understand that. Mm-hmm. Right. And of course too, because I know all, I mean, even with my typical child, I would be this way. But if your situation was serious enough that they were rushed to the hospital suddenly or something, there might be a moment where you need to let them do their job.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right. And then let's worry about this, because what is usually not very conducive to such a, you know, a traumatic situation is mama standing beside everybody, right? Right? So if it's that serious, let them do their mm-hmm. job. Stand back, let them do their job, and then be discussing with someone. Now, when he's able, this is what's going to happen. This is what he'll probably do. I need to be there for these mm-hmm. reasons. Be able to communicate or whatever it may yeah. be. And just being prepared with the language, I think, is most important.
And what I have seen, most people want to they have rules and things they are supposed to follow, COVID yes. guidelines and all of that. We get that. We understand that. But most people want to be helpful. They're not going to purposefully try to shut you out, you know, unless you're being rude about it and being,
right. Right.
you know.
And if that be the case, then yeah, you're going to get a little bit more pushback than mm-hmm. you know, than it would otherwise. But yeah, just being prepared with that.
And so in the letter, it will have the language that the legal guidelines and what it'll refer to all of that, so that it should take care of any issue that would arise.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, because I'm looking at the letter that I wrote for you now, and I mean, just one of the phrases that just stuck out is reasonable accommodations. And that's what the ADA gives you. That should sound like IEP language too, because it is, but they have to provide you with a reasonable accommodation. So, I mean, is it reasonable that John Alex should be back there by himself, unable to communicate with everyone in a medical situation? No, that's not real reasonable. Right.
Yeah. His mom's going to become very unreasonable
right.
if that
that's
happens.
Exactly
so.
Right. That's exactly right. And that's why you need to be familiar with your argument. You can present an argument and not be argumentative.
Right? Ooh, That's good. That's a good word, Don Fry.
I'm not that rule myself, but that is what you can argue it, but not be argumentative. Mm-hmm. And if you're not prepared, your mama passion is going to take over, and it's just,
yep.
it's going to be, I'll do it because I'm his mama. And nobody cares that you're his mama because he's over 18. Right. And all they're going to see is some crazy mama who wants to control their adult child.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So that's why you have to be prepared with why and have your argument. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So conservator letter and conservatorship in place. Yes. Have the letter with you. And then have this letter. And you can make it specific to your child's situation. I think the lesson I learned through all this is to be prepared and to go in knowing, you know, I went in that day for the actual surgery with him for that first one, already knowing, I've already talked to them. I know I can come in. We're covered. We're good. And plus I had the letter from my attorney friend, Don Fry, that helped. And, you know, just, there's so many things that come up that you don't think about. You know, it's kind of, I think just as we're sitting here talking right now, I think back to when John Alex was little, and we would leave to go out of town. Mm-hmm. And I would have, you know, just more information than the people that were going to be taking care of him would need. And so I think it's kind of the same thing. It's like, provide them with more information than I want them to know. He could fall out of the bed. He's not going to be able to communicate with you. All those things. And maybe even if it's written out, those kinds of things written out. Now I'm sitting here thinking, okay, for this next procedure, that's not a bad idea for me to have it written out. Here's some things you need to know about him to care for him, you know, just like I did all those years ago.
And then the argument that you're going to present, know ahead of time, this is what I do for my child with a disability. This is what service I am providing to him. That way you already have in your mind what it is that you are, what you need to do for them.
Yeah. And I think having that, so, you know, you would have that you ahead of time that you are giving to the center, the surgery center for them to let you in, but then dealing with all these different nurses throughout for them to have something written out, here's what you need to know about him. You know, and when you're in those stressful moments, you can't think about it. I can't think, oh my goodness, well, he can't, you know, he needs me for this and this and this. But to already have that just kind of like an all about me page, you know, like here's what you need to know about me.
From a legal standpoint, if you do that and you present them with these are what could happen, if something like that happens, they were on notice.
Exactly.
Notice in the law is everything. If they had notice and still let it happen,
not good.
Not good at all.
Not good.
Not good at all.
Okay. So conservator letter.
Yes.
Letter that you would send to the hospital, surgery center, doctor's office, whatever, as to why you need to be there. And then kind of like an all about me thing that says, here are the services that I provide that you would then take in with you to give to the different people before they leave your site, your child leaves your site. That they know, here it is. Here's what you need to know about my child. So I'm sitting here thinking, okay, I got some homework to do before the next procedure. So this has been helpful for me to talk this through. So
yeah, I wouldn't have thought about that list of things, but that's excellent.
Okay. Yeah, I think that would be helpful. I just know, and it's not that they're just looking at everything else. I mean, I've been asked a million times about, have you been outside the country? Have you had a COVID test? Have you, you know, all these things. But nobody's asked about communication or how does he maneuver or how do you transport him? How do you position him? Choke, you know, could he get choked? Could he, you know, none of those things have come up.
Right.
So I'm going to get me some things together that I can then give to the different people who are going to be over him while he's out of my sight.
Those people that are working in those facilities probably get yelled at every day.
Exactly.
Every day because somebody's mad because they can't come back with their loved one. They're mad.
Yeah.
So they've just, and it's part of their defense too. Sorry, nobody can come back. That's the policy. You know, they're just, because they're going to get yelled at all the time. So you got to kind of give them some grace too in that, because they have been yelled at more than once.
Well, and that's what I was saying. Just being kind, showing your respect. You can go in firm. You can say, hey, I want to just make sure you know these things about my child, but do it respectfully and with kindness. Because I will tell you, as I've been there more and more, they've given me more leeway. Every time I'm there, they see that, hey, she's going to take care of him. She is not going to be in our way. She is not going to cause problems. We can let her stay here. She's going to be safe. You know, she's not going to be a disruption. And right. So as we progress through this trial that we've been going through, every time more and more doors have been opened mm-hmm. for us. But one of the things that I've prayed before we go in is for people to see John Alex for who he is, not just as a patient, but to see this child of the King here, you know, child of God right here laying in this bed. And they do, they have been. And treating him with respect. That was been when I was treat him with respect and open up those doors. And I think it's so easy for us to get into that defensive mode as parents. And sometimes we have to. Sometimes we've got to do that. But if you go in with the mindset of that they are really here to try to help my child, then you can transition through things so much easier. Mm-hmm. So, Lori, you got any other words of wisdom to add to this conversation?
You know it. No, just listening to all of it and sitting here really more as a listener than contributor. But I see us as special needs families in a new season of education, you know, mm-hmm. just where all these medical professionals are having, once again, to figure out what does this COVID thing look like in their everyday job. And then you bring in this special scenario, this special needs situation, and they don't know. It's like you're saying, they're going to give the one answer they know, no one's right. allowed. And I think it's our job to, with grace and kindness, like you said, to educate in this new, mm-hmm. if this is our new normal for our adults with special needs, yeah. is we have a new frontier here to educate in the medical.
Right.
And I wish everybody could hear this, because I think we're going to need it in the future. Families are going to need this, especially if one of our kids does get COVID. What does that look like? You know, if I had to yeah. take my daughter in, so I'm sitting here thinking, well, I know what I need to add to her conservatorship envelope that I have. I'm going to add that letter. I personally think I'll go print off those guidelines that you are referring to that can be found on the Tennessee thing, just to be like, hey, everyday employee that's been working at the hospital who probably is unaware of the disability guidelines. Guess what? Here they are. You know, I right. printed them off for you. And then that letter, I think that just sets everybody up for a win. Me, my child, and the professionals mm-hmm. who are there to take care of them. Mm-hmm. So that's my takeaway.
Yeah.
Is, you know, it's a new opportunity to educate.
Yeah. Dawn, any last thoughts?
No, I think that's, you know, and if you're in a state that you're hearing from other, you know, the disability community from others, then, you know, try to work with the organizations you have in your state to try and get some education out. Be proactive, go ahead of it, right? And see what, just see if you can't get that education out there before people need it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think you're exactly right, Lori. It's just another education piece. I know I didn't say that often. Lori is right.
Well, friends, I want to thank you for having this conversation, because I really felt like after what we've been through this last month, and those scary moments at the very beginning of, oh my goodness, I can't imagine my child being away from me and me not being able to be there as they're coming in recovery, and that fear that got roaring in my head. I think other parents are in that same boat, or may not know, may just say, well, okay, fine, I can't go in, when they really are going to be able to. And so having the information, I think, is powerful and helps us to best know how to advocate for our family. So thank you, friends, for being here for this episode, a very important episode, as we try to educate and grow and learn as we navigate this crazy season that we're in. So thank you, friends.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Rising Above Ministries podcast. If you like what you hear, please take a minute to leave us a rating and review. This helps others like you find our content more easily. You can learn more about how Rising Above Ministries is encouraging the special needs community by checking out our website at risingaboveministries.org or by finding us on Facebook and Instagram. We look forward to connecting with you.